Nation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is the foot kicker. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Yo, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. Josh here with my trusty co-host Noah, and today is all about previewing this weekend's opponent, the West Virginia Mountaineers, for the first true road game of the Horns 2019 campaign. So, needless to say, it's going to be a hostile environment with those horns down, I think.
They seem to want to make it a hostile environment, and I mean, I guess Morgantown's always hostile, but for some reason they get more up for this game than others. So yeah, it'll probably be hostile till about midway in the first quarter when they realize they have no shot.
That sounds about right, but I'm sure the couches will be burning all the same. First off, we'll talk about these injuries that we got. As we talked about in sort of the wake of the Oklahoma State game, Caden Stearns and Jalen Green both out for approximately 4 weeks, even with that bye week. This is still only the second week, so both of those guys will be sitting, so the secondary will be a little bit weaker there. And then Jordan Whittington, freshman running back, played like two snaps against Louisiana Tech before aggravating his sports hernia or whatever it was. Tom Herman said during his Monday press conference that he is now starting to run. So it's highly, 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 highly unlikely that he's going to play against West Virginia. I would say he's not going to. But there is a chance that he's going to be back for OU, which would be a nice time to sort of unveil his full capability, really unleash him on the Sooners. But it's not all bad news on the injury front for Texas.
Yeah, we do get a couple guys back. BJ Foster probably going to play. It'll be interesting to see where he slots back in the secondary. I assume at a safety spot, but maybe they'll move Jones back and put him at nickel. And then DeMarvian Overshone and Colin Johnson are both strong maybes. I would expect Colin to get some run. Overshone, I don't know. I mean, it's not like I have inside info here, but he seems like much more of a toss-up than the other guys.
Yeah, and like you said, that I think BJ Foster coming back will be the biggest deal. Just with us losing Caden Stearns allows us to put Brandon Jones back at that nickel spot that he seemed like he was pretty comfortable in against Oklahoma State. Let's get rolling right into the strengths for West Virginia. And so far through the year, they've struggled playing Kansas. They've struggled playing their FCS opponent. They had one pretty solid win against NC State and got blown out by Missouri. So there's really not a ton of strengths that I've been able to find. The only one that sort of jumps out to me is their pass defense. Seems like it's pretty solid. I believe they've got a couple solid corners, especially cornerback Keith Washington. He's got the two interceptions for the Mountaineers so far on the year. He seems to be doing a pretty good job, but it's hard to tell how much of their pass defense is a product of them and how much is a product of their opponent.
Yeah, and it seems like they like to play a little bit more preventative defense. Like stay back, don't give up any big plays. I actually listened to Neil Brown's press conference and the defensive coordinator's press conference, and they both stressed the fact that they don't want to give up anything deep, but they're a little bit more willing to give up some short stuff. So their defense does at least seem pretty good at stopping like the deep balls. I don't know that we're going to have a bunch of like 50-plus yard plays. But at the same time, it's kind of interesting because I know they had one blown coverage against Kansas. They gave up a long touchdown. And like listening to their own coaches, they talked a lot about how they're still trying to like implement and make sure that guys are playing sound, like disciplined defense and stuff. But at the very least, it's working for the most part. And their defense seems to at least be a lot better than their offense.
And I think the last time we said that we weren't going to have a bunch of 50-yard plays was against LSU. And that's when we ended up breaking our 50-yard play streak. So now I'm expecting Brennan Eagles to rip off at least one.
Honestly, I kind of am too. I think they might just blow a coverage or two, or Eagles might just make a great play, you know. But I think that their plan going into it sounds like, is going to at least be to try to take away the deep stuff.
Sounds like a Devin Duvernay kind of game then.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Should be lots of those short little dump-offs and just let him or Jake Smith just try and go wild with the short passes.
I could definitely see a repeat of the Oklahoma State game where they're just going to give everything to our H-back, and then we might have like one Brennan Eagles broken coverage, and then like nobody has more than two catches except for Duvernay.
With that, since that was kind of a short bit there, basically we're forced to move on here to the weaknesses for West Virginia. And the first one that jumps off the page was sort of the, I guess, I don't know if I'd call it much publicized, but decently well-known transfer. With Jalen Hurts going to Oklahoma, it pushed the assumed starter for OU, Austin Kendall, out the door. And he transferred to West Virginia. And so far this year, it's easy to see why Lincoln Riley was wanting to move on from him as the quarterback.
Yeah, he's not very good. And the thing is, he's also not helped by anybody else on the team, because West Virginia is kind of lacking in receiver talent, which I don't know how you end up in that situation in the modern game when there are just so many talented receivers all over the country to recruit. Like, I've actually thought about, like, over the summer, like, who doesn't have a good wide receiver core? Well, apparently West Virginia doesn't, because it sounds like they have one guy, Sam James, maybe? I can't remember his last name. I think it starts with a J.
That sounds right.
Yeah, but they have one guy that's doing pretty good. They have another guy the coaches seem to trust. And the coaches themselves said in their press conferences, like, whoever is going to be our number three receiver is just going to be the guy that practices best that week. And it's probably going to be that way for the entire season. So Kendall's not really getting any help there. He's also not getting any help with a good offensive line, because their offensive line is pretty bad. So he's kind of just stuck, and it's just a really weird transition year for this Neil Brown team.
Yeah, definitely the hardest part with that lack of support is Austin Kendall already seems like he's really not in control of the offense as it is, and it makes it a lot harder for him to settle into his own sort of rhythm and get his confidence up when it seems like they're more or less having to lean on him the entire game. Their run game sort of had a breakout against Kansas, and that took them from 123rd in the country to 115th in the country. And I doubt that's something that's, and that's just the raw stat. So I doubt that's something that's helped with your advanced stats, considering their competition in an FCS opponent in Kansas and in Missouri and NC State. None of those are big name run defense teams. So them being like bad just on paper is not going to be changed by strength of schedule.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and they're last in the Big 12 in offense right now, I think, in just terms of yardage or in terms of yards per game. So they definitely are not exactly they're not exactly a typical Big 12 team. It will be interesting to see what Neil Brown is able to do, because I actually think that Brown is a really good coach. I'm a really big fan of his. I think he'll be successful there. But just in the first year of installing a new offense, you might see improvement of it just naturally over the course of the year as he like instills a system. But the early returns are definitely not very good, and I don't think they'll get any better this week, because we should have a pretty sizable advantage on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, and for that size advantage that we have, West Virginia is also hurt by the fact that they are actually hurt. I believe their best offensive lineman was one of the Sills brothers. He is out with a shoulder injury. I think he had to have surgery either last week or the week before. So they're taking an already weak unit and really not having any luck finding a way to make it better. It really doesn't... All of this sort of goes to show the situation that Dana Holgorsen had sort of created for himself, and it informs his choice to leave and go to Houston. Was he knew that he was going to have this basically empty cupboard that he'd left for himself this season, and knew he'd be getting fired, because last year was basically West Virginia's version of emptying the chamber for the first time since like that wild 2007 year where they blew it against Pitt.
Yep, and Neil Brown is the one that's left to try to scrape together something. I know they, you already mentioned Austin Kendall, the transfer. I know they have a lot of other transfers. They have some guys from big name programs like Alabama. So there is some talent, but it's also talent that hasn't actually developed. So it's kind of just a really tough spot to be in. And it's going to be, they're 3-1 though. At the end of the day, they are 3-1, right? So they are capable of winning football games. They're better than Kansas, which probably isn't saying Barely. Much, but I mean, hey, Kansas actually won a game in convincing fashion this year, so that's a step forward for that program. So none of this is to say that West Virginia is just, like, totally incompetent. They're not, I mean, Tennessee or Rutgers or one of those schools.
Or Boston College, apparently.
Yeah, but they're also not very good. Their defense, it's kind of funny because we were talking about their strengths with pass defense being one of their better performing units. But my understanding is that their defensive front is actually a little bit more talented than their secondary. So I am really interested to see how we're going to be able to do against that. I know that they have Dante and Darius Stills, two brothers on the defensive line that have put up some pretty good sack and tackle for loss numbers this year. So I'm sure that they'll try to create some penetration and everything, but I just don't think that they'll have enough to slow down our offense.
No, and like we talked about during the bye week episode, we have faced actually some pretty good defenses already this year, or at least better than I think we expected. So there's a lot of reason to believe that we're anything that might give us a little bit of resistance, that we're going to be able to work our way through it and still find a way to put up 35, 40 points without too much effort required. And with all that talent that's on their defense, and we talked about the pass defense seemingly being good, and you talk about the talent that they have in the front seven, somehow all of that still works out to combine to be the worst defense in the Big 12 as far as points allowed per drive. So for everything that seems like it should be working on that defense, the sort of sum of the parts seems to be less than, or it the end product is less than the sum of the parts. This episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast on Hornscast is sponsored by Last Stand Hats, the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Last Stand Hats gives Texas fans the opportunity to showcase their burnt orange pride by providing apparel options outside the standard block T and Longhorn logos. If you're looking for more variety in your Longhorn gear, you have to check out laststandhats.com. And if you use the code HORNSCAST10 at checkout, you'll save 10% on your order. So make sure to wear your heart on your head and go to laststandhats.com. Hook 'em. All right, let's move on to the all-name team candidates. This one was actually pretty good. Sometimes it feels like we're picking through every roster, trying to find a few good names. And I would say, as far as just overall team quality, I think West Virginia might be the best team we've reviewed so far this year.
Yeah, I definitely think they could put together pretty... They put together a pretty solid roster for the all-name team just on their own.
It also helps, kind of like how we have the Rover as sort of a linebacker position. They've got their own fun name for one of their linebacking positions as the Bandit, because every defensive coordinator apparently has a different name for that sort of wild card player that you're throwing out there that can do a little bit of everything. But in this case, their top two players, at least according to my quick Google search of their depth chart, their top two Bandits, both, I think, are great all-name team candidates. Their starter is Quandarius Qualls, and then his backup is Zach Sandwich.
Yep, and so I picked out a couple here. And so the first two, I'm taking them as a pair. And the first one is Freddie Brown, which is pretty unspectacular. But there's another guy on the roster named Letty Brown. Like, this is Freddie, F-R-E-D-D-I-E, and Letty, L-E-D-D-I-E. So I just think it's incredible not that they have a guy named Letty, but they also have a guy named Freddie spelled in the same way with the same last name as well. There's another Brown on the roster, but that's Michael, so that's not as exciting. But yeah, I'm taking Freddie and Letty with my all-name team picks.
We did very little research, but I choose my sort of headcanon for those guys is that they're like the Fournette brothers, with Leonard and Leonard Fournette. My next pick is going to be backup cornerback Nick Troy Fortune.
And so I actually did look at the roster. I looked at pictures of them, and I definitely think that the Browns are not related.
I wonder what that means.
My next pick is going to be Darius and Dante Stills. I mentioned them earlier on the defensive line. They're both having pretty good years. Seem to be two of the better players on the West Virginia roster. And those guys actually are related. They are brothers. But, yeah, it's kind of interesting. They have a lot of people with the same last name, and I don't think all of them are brothers. They have a couple Campbells, a couple Drummonds, three Browns. So it just seems like they have a lot. It seems like there's a higher occurrence of sharing a last name on that West Virginia roster. And, it just makes you question. It makes you question, how do I put it, some of the family dynamics and bloodlines going on down there in West Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's just sort of a known problem down there, or up there. I don't know. And then my last one for the all-name team candidates, weak side linebacker X-Ree Lowe. I don't know how many of these guys, at least Quandarius Qualls, I know for sure you'll see his name pop up in game, but I don't know how many of these guys are going to be on the field regularly that you'll get to hear ESPN, ABC's announcers try and pronounce some of these.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, Stills brothers, but other than that, none of them really came out as standout players. All right, well, you want to do score predictions now?
Yeah, so the score for our score predictions, basically as a reminder, or at least at the time of recording, line currently stands at Texas. I put plus 10.5, that's wrong. Texas is favored by 10.5, so Texas minus 10.5. If we were the underdog by 10.5 points to this West Virginia team, there would be some serious calls to fire Tom Herman, but that is not the situation we're in. The line is Texas by 10.5. Noah, what's your sort of thoughts? How far off is that line?
Mm-hmm. So I don't see this West Virginia team scoring. I don't see them hitting 30, basically. I don't think their offense is good enough. I kind of think that they're going to struggle to hit 20, but I also know that we have a lot of youth on defense. With some of the injuries, like, we might surrender a couple more points than we normally wouldn't. So I've got them at 24, and then I've got us at 41. I almost want to go with a larger prediction than that, but I just can't quite bring myself to do it. So I'm just going to stick with a really solid 17-point win.
I remember our sort of pre-recording discussion. I heard you float the 51-24, and I
51-14, something like that. I don't know. I don't think that we're quite there as a team where we're putting up those regular, like, 20, 30-point beatdowns. But winning by 17...
Especially on conference opponents.
Yeah, winning a road conference game by 17 is a good start.
Yep, I'm not too far off. I have the spread, or the difference between us, a little bit larger. I've got Texas 45, West Virginia 21. We talked about the struggles that they have, or that West Virginia has running the ball. And that's basically the strength of this defense, is the ability to shut down the run. And with Austin Kendall being, I think, one of the shakier quarterbacks in the conference, it's going to be a lot easier on the secondary, even with the injuries, even without Jalen Green. I think the defense will be able to step up. 21 points. I think some of that's going to be coming late in the game for West Virginia. I think they're going to be trying to force some stuff, and some stuff is going to get through with the amount of youth that we've got at corner. But overall, it's not going to be enough for us to worry about it, and I think we'll still cruise to a pretty significant victory without a whole lot of fanfare.
Yeah, same. I think one thing that kind of plays into our advantage is that Neil Brown is one of the coaches that, despite coming up in an air raid system, he runs a very balanced offense. They're going to come out with a lot of tempo, but they're definitely going to try to establish the run early on. And I think that can kind of backfire, because I think that we're going to be really successful defending the run. So I think that almost puts them at a little bit of a early disadvantage, which will kind of give us the opportunity to jump out to a bit of a lead there. So I'm sure that we'll give up some points, but it could easily be one of those things where we're up two or three scores early and they're always just trying to just, like, paddle and survive rather than actually threaten.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see the defense come out with a very similar game plan to what they had against Oklahoma State, where it shut down the run and then the rest sort of will figure itself out. Because we can do that again, because West Virginia does not have the wide receiving talent that Oklahoma State has, doesn't have the quarterback that can make plays with his legs like Spencer Sanders could. So I expect to see more or less what we saw out of the defense last time this Texas team took the field.
Mm-hmm.
With that, let's move on to the hot takes. I'll go first since you went first with the prediction. So my hot take, I guess, isn't super spicy, but just given that I'm expecting a pretty large margin of victory, it's going to cause West Virginia to feel like they need to throw the ball more, and I don't trust that Austin Kendall is going to be able to make good decisions with the ball, trying to keep West Virginia in the game. He's not a hero ball type of quarterback. So I'm going to say that Anthony Cook gets his first career interception, and I did hesitate. I thought about putting both Anthony Cook and Deshaun Jameson as getting their first career interceptions, but for right now, I'll settle just for Anthony Cook getting his.
Yeah, I hope so. One other final, like, last thing for actual, like, discussion, I guess, before my hot take is Neil Brown talked in his press conference about how, like, one of their goals is to get guys isolated one-on-one in coverage. And so I think that we're definitely going to see our defensive backs get tested. I mean, not not to the level of like a CeeDee Lamb pass from Jalen Hurts, you know, but they're going to try to get our guys in one-on-ones and in man coverage whenever we run that. So I definitely think that our defensive backs will have their chances to make a play. So I would definitely love for a guy like Anthony Cook or Deshaun Jameson to step up and actually, you know, show something, build some confidence, and maybe can carry that forward from here on out.
It would be nice, because it seems like a lot of our problems this year have not been because the defense is out of position. It's just not being able to finish the play. We've had guys be in position and the ball still gets through, and they're just a split second late about getting a hand in the way or whatever.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of dangerous throws that have been made against us where if the guy gets his head turned around a little bit sooner, we could be talking about an interception instead. So I think that's the kind of thing that you can work on through the bye week when you're able to focus basically for a week and a half, 2 weeks on your next opponent. I think that's the kind of thing that gets cleaned up and we could see nice little improvement. I'm not going to go out and say that it's enough to start not ironically chanting DBU after the LSU game, but enough to sort of give us more confidence that our young secondary is still developing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree on that point. Man, Kobe Boyce could be an All-American if he could learn to swat a ball. Okay, I'm not actually going that far, but Kobe Boyce is definitely the guy that has the greatest room for improvement there in my mind. But all of our corners are kind of wanting in that area. All right, anyways, my hot take is that we have more points than they have rushing yards. I think that our run defense versus their run offense is a really big mismatch. I think we could jump out to a lead. I don't actually expect this to happen because I think that Brown is actually a guy that's going to be committed to making the run work. I expect them to get at least a couple runs of like double-digit yards. But I could also see a sort of scenario like USC last year where they have a couple runs like that, but then we get 20 or 30 yards and sacks on Austin Kendall, and suddenly they have like 5 yards rushing. USC had like -5. So yeah, more points than rushing yards allowed.
That would be nice. I mean, it's always nice to have one of those games, even though in that USC game, I don't remember, it was like 320 yards passing or whatever for USC's quarterback, for whatever that kid's name is. He's hurt for the year, so he's completely out of sight,
JT
out of mind
Daniels
for me.
There we go. I was trying to think of
JT
it too.
JT Daniels, that's it. Whoever that is. Yeah, but yeah, I could definitely see that working out, just like we said, with the known struggles, even before they've played our rush defense. It wouldn't surprise me yet. Their leading rusher might get 50 yards, but if we get 3 or 4 or even 5 sacks, which is not out of the question given the weakness of this offensive line, it would not be a surprise to see Austin Kendall take 40 or 50 yards back off of their rush total just as a result of that.
Yeah, or maybe they'll run for 120 and we'll score like 130. You never know.
That'd be nice. I mean, what's the most... Well, I guess I already know the answer. I was going to ask, what's the most points that's ever been scored in a college football game? But I already knew my one team. But that's the 222 by Georgia Tech against Cumberland, the legendary game.
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Wasn't John Heisman the actual guy who the Heisman is named after?
Yeah, he was the coach. Okay, everybody should watch the YouTube video on it. I think it's by a guy named like John Boyes or something like that, but he has a really good video that kind of talks about what happened in that game to allow a team to score 222 points, because it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, if you thought Sam Ehlinger took the horns down thing in Austin too much to heart last year, you should really sort of, that would be a good story for you to hear, just to see the level of payback that John Heisman was willing to levy on Cumberland for that game.
Yeah, it's legendary stuff.
So that wraps up our preview of the West Virginia Mountaineers, who your Longhorns will be facing off with this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. from Morgantown. I'm actually going to be attending the Florida-Auburn game. So the one time that I actually want a noon kickoff, we're not going to get a noon kickoff. And of course, with the SEC having CBS, and CBS only gets one primetime game a year, and they're saving that for Alabama, LSU, or Alabama, Auburn for sure. I'm stuck going, well, not stuck. I am excited to go to this game. I'm excited to see. I went to the Swamp last year when CSU went down to play Florida. And I wanted to go back to see the Swamp when they actually give a shit about who they're playing, because they certainly didn't against Colorado State. So I'm excited for that game, but of course it happens to kick at the exact same time. So I'm going to miss the entire West Virginia game. So I'll be rewatching it on the YouTube channel like everyone else, or I guess as I'm uploading it to the YouTube channel since I'm the one who does that. So I'll have to catch up when I get back home. So for those of you out there, no spoilers, please. But in the meantime, follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. And don't forget to hit us up either there or at the Fire Tom Herman Hot Take Line at 512-655-9038. Let us know your reactions during the game, after the game. If there's something big that happens in one of the games before we play, you can give us a call, shoot us a text, whatever. Just let us know your hot takes throughout the day Saturday. We'll see you guys next weekend. We'll see you guys next week to hopefully discuss a Texas win. Hook 'em.